All right, welcome to the next edition of Firefighting Fridays. My name is Jeff Diedrich. I'm with Strategic Fire Training. And this episode, of course, we have Jeff Shoup with us. And we're going to expand a little bit on our topic from last month, culture in the engine house. All of us here tonight are here to express our concerns with all things fire training. And we'd like to say a special thank you to Fire Engineering for hosting us. Quickly, let's go over to Micah Heidemann. We'll get a quick review of what we hit last month, and we'll get started from there. Micah, what do you have from the minutes from last month?
Perfect. So last month we discussed culture, of course, and a lot of the bullet points I'll just read off real quick. A major thing was lead by example. Our actions will speak louder than words, having roll call in the morning and getting assignments, motivating that 5 to 10 year veteran and that person, how the younger guys can influence the older guys, set a common goal and build on development, a plan and process. A younger guy can have as much influence as a 20-year-old guy. And if you don't protect your traditions and culture, you'll lose them. Quote by the man, senior man, Jeff Shoup. Last thing I wanted to hit on is I want to pay respect to a pretty much a pandemic in our service today. At my fire department in Kansas City, Kansas Fire Department, we lost a good brother. He was going through some struggles, and his name is Matthew Brewer. You may have seen his name come across this mainstream. Unfortunately, he took his life, and we want to pay respects to him because he served our city for a short time, and then he served his country very well for 7 years in the Marines. If anyone that's out there listening, if you're having some issues or know somebody who may be going through some issues, reach out to them. There's a lot of resources available, and I know we're not immune to it.
Micah, you're right. From dealing with suicides becoming too much of a reality in the fire service, it's been that way in the military for a while. From my work down here with the 22 kill, where 22 veterans kill themselves every day. What you have to remember is, guys, if you get to where it's that bad, please reach out to somebody. I guarantee you, any of your brothers at the firehouse will help. Call somebody. There are groups and foundations that will help you. The best one being, one of the best ones I know is the Rosecrans Florian. It's based out of Chicago. And I mean, we don't want to talk about suicide without offering some help. There are people in the fire service that specialize in it. Chief Dan DeGrice, retired Chicago Fire Department, helped start the Rosecrans Florian program, and he runs it now. And just to have it out there, since we mentioned suicide, if you need help, please call 866-330-8729. 866-330-8729.
God bless the men and women that find themselves in that position where they think there's no other way out. We've all been touched by this at this point. Truly is the real epidemic that has gone through our society across the fire service and beyond. So our regards to your brother there in Kansas City, Micah.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
All right. With that being said, let's get into brass tacks, as we say. So culture in the firehouse. We had left off talking about what it takes to get a firehouse into some culture. And we were starting to zero in on the firehouses that may not have the long-term tradition. Those that are starting out, maybe at a volunteer status, maybe a part-time paid, or maybe those that are just newly become a paid service. How do you get culture started? And it's about action. Mantras and mission statements on the wall are one thing, but they are not the thing. So what we need to show is how do we do it? And I'd like to bounce off some of the senior men in the room here. How do we do that out on the calls? How did they do it back in their day? So both Jeff, Jerry, in your experience, before Velcro tag accountability boards, and when everybody had a walkie-talkie, because there was a time back in the 1900s where not everybody had one of those, how does a company stay together, work together, and come home together?
Jeff, I think it starts back in the firehouse. Basic leadership, some common goals. Hey, what do we want this group to be able to do? What does our team want to do? We want to be able to stretch a line, get water in a fire, and decisively attack this fire. So the senior guys and obviously the officers need to have a set a common goal. You kind of talk that up. You have that culture in the fire service, and you're exactly right. It's got to transfer to the fire scene. It's like a sports team. You know, you practice and then you have game day. You know, our game day is a little bit more, more important than other games. I just want to jump back to suicides for a second. There's a great book. It's called Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez. Deep Survival. And it talks about the body-mind interface and why we do things that aren't necessarily smart. It's not light reading, but it's very good. Gonzalez studied 300 near-death or death experiences and kind of evaluated why guys did things. So I just throw it out there, Deep Survival. So getting back to, culture, it's you gotta set the goals and then keep nudging that culture along the way. And I think that's the key.
It's an action-driven event, I think. And what makes it worse, I think, is where, I don't want to say makes it worse, but what makes it more difficult is when you're a newer organization, younger organization, and you don't have the fire activity to back that up. So then it defaults down to training. It does it not? I mean, you have to take training that much more seriously because you don't have the experience-based information. So you have to take the training-based information to kind of forge the staffing to run in a certain direction together. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think the training has got to be realistic. You know, if you're going to do an engine company drill, and you pull up in your parking lot or at the training ground or wherever, and you lollygag and get off the rig, and, you know, 5 minutes later, the line's flowing water, that's not training. You know, it's like, hey, what's the goal? The goal is water in 90 seconds, 45 seconds, whatever it might be. And the senior men and the officers need to continue to set that culture target to whatever it is. And once you get a few of these, I think the guys get that culture then, hey, we want to be good. We want to continue to sharpen our skills. We want to continue to get water on the fire faster. And that takes that training culture and moves it into the real world. And when you get a couple of successes, you got guys going like, hey, man, we did it. This is really good. And you get that positive feedback going.
There's nothing like going to either it's a real snotty job or a big multi-company operation job after not being busy for a long time. And you can kind of ride that honeymoon period afterwards, I guess, as a someone who's interested in the job or a training officer and as a company officer. For me, after the men have been to something that was a legitimate concern, the next couple of training offerings seem to be taken a lot more seriously. And I think that's just a human nature. Like, okay, yeah, occasionally this really does matter. You know, we gotta get this thing right. I think it pays off dividends to have that focus as a group, and maintain the focus through those periods of inactivity is really tough. A challenge that maybe guys that have been working in a business where there was a lot of work to do haven't really considered. What's it like to work at a department where those jobs just don't come on a regular basis? How do you stay motivated? How do you keep training hard? But in the same respect, if you have been in a position where you saw a lot of activity, you saw where the companies that weren't paying attention, even though they were getting activity, how they would step back rather than step forward. Have you seen that kind of scenario play out where companies that should have been better than they were, but that was their culture to step back? Is that a reality?
Yeah, I think it is, Jeff. I think the engine company or the fire companies and departments that continually push the culture of, hey, you know what? It could be tonight, could be life and death for us, as opposed to that complacent, we never go to fires, what the hell? You know, you're going to go to a fire, you're going to go to a hazmat call, you're going to go to something where, you know what, lives are in danger. And we tend to forget that, you know, this is Harry Carter used to always say, what the hell, it's only a matter of life and death. And, you know, it is. I mean, we need to remind folks of that, you know, and I think that helps set the culture and it kind of elevates the guy's ego to think, hey, you know, I'm kind of important. You know, I ought to put some effort into this training or I ought to make sure I check my tools or whatever it might be.
I'm going to pitch this to Shoup. Jeff, when you were having your time with the volunteer company and then later when you were trying to work things out as a chief officer down in the Carolinas, working with fire companies that just weren't seeing a lot of fire activity, some guys motivated, some guys not motivated. Tough thing to navigate somebody from your background, your experience level. So, you know, what were some of the things that you learned along the way trying to lead these people into the correct way of approaching the job?
Wow. First of all, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, good. All right. This is interesting because, you know, we're trying to look at both a volunteer operation and a career operation and talk about one thing that affects both. Well, let me say, I just from my perspective, if you have an older department, you hope to have older established ways of doing business, just like you have your rank structure. And you need to have respect for the rank to a point. Like I've always said, you might not like the guy who's the boss above you or the chief of your department or whoever it is who is above you. You might not like them, but you have to look at that rank that they've got. And you have to try to work within that framework of that guy or that rank when you're out in the streets, especially. When you're a volunteer, Jerry, you've been a volunteer for 1,000 years, you know, and I've seen it from my perspective also. It's hard compared to a career operation where you have guys coming in on meeting night and you're trying to say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to do from here on out. But when you're doing 200 calls a year, you know, and you don't have regular fires, as you were saying, it's hard for them to see where things fall into place. Being the fires are circumstantial, which we've said all along, you start throwing these curveballs at these people, and that becomes even more complex to them. This is where the officership, I won't call them leaders, you know, I'd like to stick with the word officers who are leading the organization, okay, have to go out and research what works best. Because remember, every fire department has its own personality. Just like in a big city operation, you might have 30 firehouses times 3 shifts. Figure 90 groups of people. Okay. So how do we make them uniform? And that's where things like SOPs come in, general orders, rules and regulations, and so forth. So you hope they read that. You hope your older people in your departments, regardless if it's volunteer or career, sits down with that group and goes over them. Yeah, it's very simple. Look, for, you know, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of us have been to Iowa together. There's pictures to prove it, okay? And we were sitting in the meeting room of that firehouse. And we had a couple of other people with us there. And it's like we were thinking about, what are we going to teach these guys? What are we going to leave them with? I don't know if you guys remember that afternoon, but I... And that was interesting, you know, when you think about it. Okay, we had a whole bunch of people coming in there and so forth. So what's the message? What do we tell them? What do we tell them about company concept? To me, as a volunteer, but a career a firefighter and a chief officer, company concept, especially for the engine, has to happen. It has to happen. Because it's the engine that has the responsibility. When it pulls up to that fire, it's their responsibility to get water going. You see, you just can't play this thing that, and I think what's happened recently, again, let's take a look at that, what I mentioned earlier. Older fire departments, older bosses, older people, younger people. When you guys came into the job, fresh off the streets, what did you know about the job? Not much, right?
Zero.
You relied on those people. You relied on those bosses, okay? They were supposed to give you that and guide you. And as time went on, you're looking at the, oh, we can do a lot more. We can learn a lot more. We can, you know, do this and that and so forth. But nevertheless, it's what you were working under. Now, as time has gone on, we've seen all these people retiring and younger people coming in. This thing that we're on right now, the computer with these programs and so forth. You got so many guys out there who know nothing about the procedures, nothing about SOPs, nothing about rules and regulations. Or, for example, John and I are talking about a fire back home. First engine went in with the line. Second engine comes in the scene, pulls the second line. Instead of that second line going in behind the first line to back up their position should something happen, they pulled to an outside corner of this structure that was burning. Well, lightning strikes, and as I was told by someone who was there, the first line lost its water temporarily. So the fire accelerates and makes great footage for the camera. And here's the second line. Instead of being behind the first line where it should be, just for that thing that happened, that lightning bolt out of the blue, they were outside. Okay, so that's an officer thing. Not only a company officer, but a chief officer thing. And that's where I say this thing that's happened today is giving us so much mixed information. So how do guys develop a culture when you have all this happen? This doesn't happen only in one department. It happens everywhere across the country. There's all this stuff about, well, we need to do this before we even think about pulling a line. We got to run a couple laps around the building, or we got to, talk about this first. You know, you want to see if you're in the right frame of mind and stuff like that. And it's taken away from the tried and true principles and practices of firefighting. So,
That's kind of where I was hoping. I don't want to say hoping. That's where I knew you'd be going with this, Jeff. Translating the culture into an aggressive engine, offensive attack, is the culture that, you know, we preach. We try to put into the students that come to your class is
our class.
We want to attack the fire with everything we got, with what we got, and to hold nothing back. And what that takes is to having plan A and B covered with just three people. And to get after it with the knowledge that this may not go well, but we've got a plan for that. And most times we're going to get it with what we got, with the people we have, with the resources we have, with the nozzle selection that we have. But that culture comes from the attitude of wanting to do it, to wanting to put yourself there, and not leaving it to anybody else. I mean, how does that strike you? Does that make sense? Where we'd rather put that personnel, instead of in a DOT vest with a clipboard, we'd rather put that person helping to shag hose, correct?
Hey, Jer, didn't Andy say something about the can-do attitude in his times while he was talking, you know, and putting stuff out there?
He did. In fact, in New York, we have to carry a bailout bag. And when that was started, Andy said, if you put the fire out, you don't have to jump out the window, you know? So I think there's a couple important things here, and Jeff hit on them. The senior guys at some point need to say, hey, this is serious business. People get hurt. People get killed. You better get off your butt, you know, and stop this political correctness. And the senior guys need to go get off your ass, and here's what we're going to do. And what I tell my guys on the volunteer side is, I've never been to a volunteer fire, but my first 5 years, I put 8 people in body bags. So if you think this ain't fun, you think this is fun, it's a lot of fun, but you can get dead. You can get really dead really fast doing this. And you know, I mean, we all live with it every day, and you know, we've all been around the block. But if we don't lay it out to the new people like that, you know, they just don't get it. And they shouldn't be able to, they don't have any experience, you know. We did a crisis intervention for a department a while ago, a couple of weeks ago, because there was a couple of kids that went to a JAWS call, and they used the JAWS of life, and the person died, and he was dead right there in front of him, and these poor kids were freaking out. So I addressed the probie class. I go, you know, what do you call those things that you pry a car apart? Oh yeah, yeah, JAWS of life. I go, you know what? They're the JAWS of death. And they all look at me like, holy crap. I go, you know what? You whip those things out, maybe you got a 50-50 chance of saving somebody. I'm not telling you not to be good with them. I'm not telling you, you know, to be negative about it. But this is serious business. And if you think you're going to whiz in and everything's, you know, you're going to play this game and go home and everybody's going to be great, there may be some dead people there.
I think you're right on. I mean, in my observation, back in the 1900s, you know, in the 90s, when we pulled out the extrication tools, it was on a regular occurrence. Now we get to rollovers and doors open and people just get out of the car. It's remarkable. So if we're getting out the tools now, in my personal opinion, there's a higher incidence of fatality just because of the amount of energy that it took.
I mean, you can use that same, you know, analogy with stretching a hose line. You know, fires are going faster now. We all know that all that stuff. So we got to get the hose line in there. Like Jeff said, you got to be aggressive, and the older guys got to be saying, Hey, young guy, you know, not to be rated or not to beat him up, but go, hey, this is serious shit, you know? And if you don't care about you, what you do might hurt me. And you know, that's kind of the reality side of it. And you got to sugarcoat some of it, but that's what we're here for.
As far as culture is concerned with engine companies, I think where we're defaulting here is the amount and the quality of training, where you want to make it as realistic as possible, as job specific to your organization as possible. And as long as the emphasis is on attacking the fire in an offensive attitude. So with that, I'd like to bounce something off John. When it comes to training companies that have been around for, you know, a long time in a very busy city, it can't be easy talking these busy companies into coming down to the academy and doing certain drills. But where have you seen some successes and where have you seen some struggles when it comes to the culture in your own department of, you know, yeah, we're Cleveland and everybody knows we're Cleveland and you guys are really good at what you do. But where are some of the successes and where are some of the struggles there?
I think some of the successes, I'll be honest, I was really impressed with my department. We brought them down for a drill and some companies are coming down. You're like, oh, here we go. It's this crew. Let's see how it goes. And remarkably, everyone walked out of there and they were really excited and happy. They're like, wow, that was a really good drill. It was pertinent to what we do. And I think that's where our training has to be. It has to be stuff that we do, that we need to do, whether it's search or it's forcible entry, or it's advancing a hose line, whatever. It just has to be something that we guys could see themselves doing, as opposed to going on the computer, checking the box. Yes, I read this SOP. Yes, I now know geriatric this or that. You know, it gets old. Guys get bored with it. Let them put some tools in their hands, let them do stuff, and all of a sudden guys are pretty motivated. And you're right, we have a wide range of guys on job. We have a lot of guys with 25 years on, and we're going to hire a cadet class here, and pretty soon half of our department will have been hired in the last 8 years. And you're talking a 750-man department.
Half.
Wow. Right about half, yes. So somewhere around 300 to 350 guys out of 750. So probably closer to 350 out of 750. So I was really expecting guys to come down with negative attitudes, like, oh, here we go. We have to do another drill. And we used to have that attitude on our department. We had some training that was really difficult. We had bosses that would berate you, embarrass you, call you out in front of other guys. And I think a lot of guys got a bad taste in their mouth. So doesn't matter how long ago that was, you know. I've been on for 20 years, and I can remember that. And still bringing guys down, I think guys are hesitant. The guys with 25 years on are still like, oh, crap, here we go. You know, I don't want to make a mistake. And when they do make a mistake, we just stop them. Stop, you know, let's think about what we did here. And it's constructive. It isn't, hey, Mateer, you're an idiot. You would have just killed your whole crew and all this stuff. So as long as we keep it pertinent, I think guys are going to do it. Guys will enjoy it.
I think that part of that is, you know, and with that same generation as you coming into the fire service, part of that is who was training us when we came on and who trained them. Yeah. and how it got done. And Shoop has talked about that. He's, you know, as he was my academy instructor, and obviously he was your senior man. There was a way of doing things. And, but as generations come through, we have to find a way to make the department's culture survive in a way that works well with each generation's best way of learning. So because we're all a product of who raised us, right? So it's kind of like a psychological equation here, but I think there's something to be said for the way that our generation picks up information, the way Jeff's generation picked up information. And then obviously these Xers that are coming up behind us, you know, we have to be cognizant of that. And how do we keep our culture moving in the right direction? But we still understand, hey, this is what works best for the millennials and on. We have to give them the bona fide reasons why we're doing that. Does that make sense?
It does. I just lost my train of thought there, but going along, continue on. I just lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Hey, Jeff.
Go ahead, John.
Hey, Jeff, Jerry, bail me out.
Two things. One is that the culture thing is a continuum, and I'm not sure you can instill culture by training. My vision of this is, you know, Jeff Shoup takes Fireman Jerry and puts his arm around him. We go for a walk around the engine, or, you know, over a cup of coffee. It's like, you know, it's that personal, hey, look, you know, this is how we do it. This is what's important. So I think it's a continuum. And I think it's if we're talking culture, I think it's a very personal thing. And I don't think we could depend on the computers. And no. That's just my view of where it comes from.
In my estimation, a lot of it is seniority oriented. Mm-hmm. You know, you just can't take it. I'm speaking from my position for both volunteer and career operations. You need to have older people who have been around the block once or twice, who have been exposed to a lot of different things in their career and time in the job, whether it's, you know, like I said, volunteer or career. And somebody who knows what's expected of if they ride an engine or if they ride a truck or if they ride a squad or whatever the case may be. Okay. Someone who can take those younger people and guide them. You've heard me talk about my captain, you know, when I first went on the job, you know, what his nickname was and what he did. His crews were handpicked with all senior guys. The guys have been through the riots and been through some of the busiest times, and everybody went through the senior men. Because you know why? When you look back, and it was kind of interesting, this guy. He was just phenomenal, you know. He could sit in the kitchen with you at 11:30 midnight, you know, and just start talking party party. This is a captain, no problem. Oh, Jesus Christ, nicknamed John. Yes. As a fireman, a young fireman, you're going to be working with the younger guy, with the older guys. The boss is going to be doing his job. Mm-hmm. And he's expecting you to do what that senior man tells him. So there's a healthy respect there for the younger person and the senior firefighters. Because those senior firefighters, you know, like I said, they were picked for reasons to be on that crew. And if a company officer has that in mind, okay, that I've got a great crew, here's a young kid, you know, like Jerry mentioned, I like that illustration, put your arm around the kid, let's walk around the engine. Okay, you're now an engine guy. And nothing can be further from the truth. You know, it's just like the same thing, you know, kid goes through the academy, gets his first assignment, goes to an engine, and really his eyes should be this big too. And it's going to be the people at that firehouse, you hope, who are going to mold him and give him a start on his culture within the department. This can sometimes be a very complex thing, culture, you know, because it varies from fire station to fire station, shift to shift, department to department. Jerry, you know, works in Rockland County. And so they've got how many departments up there might you work with?
Yeah, 26.
Yeah. So you go to a fire, you know, and you got all these different fire departments coming in. Is everybody on the same page? And what's the culture of this department versus this one or this one who we're working with tonight? What's the attitude of the people and so forth? So yeah, it's a hard thing, you know. But if you got it, I think you know it.
I think one of the cool things about the fire service is cultures tend to either galvanize or change radically when they get challenged beyond what has been normal. And I think Chad could probably weigh in on this after going through the a little bit of what we in the North would call normal wet winter. Not so normal down by you. Snow on the trees is kind of a normal thing here, but it's definitely challenged your area. And you know, what kind of fruits did you pick off of this one?
So, you know, guys, we said last, I've been a lieutenant now for, I think, almost 2 months, and I've only been with my new crew for about a month. So I kind of kept quiet the first month, you know, hey, we're going to do some stuff. And because I got to try to find out where I fit in and what kind of culture this shift had. I'd been on the same shift for 22 years and all of a sudden I got moved. And so I've kind of been feeling them out. They're feeling me out most of the way it does. I have a very young crew. I think my senior man is 7 years. And so to kind of go back to what Jerry said at the beginning with how do you instill training without, you know, if you're not going to fires. And then 2 weeks ago, Icegeddon, Snowmageddon hits us in Texas. And, you know, I called each one of y'all crying at different times of the day because I have never worked in -2 degrees in my 22 years.
I can't, with or without the wind chill, Chad?
That was without.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, first of all, I want to say how proud I am of my shift and my department. I think, you know, we average maybe 15 to 20 calls a day normally. And that's for the department, small, you know, small town. My engine made 48 calls the first day the snow hit, and two of them were fires. And man, and it sucked. It really did. It's the first time I've been in bunker gear for 24 hours straight. and it never came off. My neck got all chafed. It was terrible. So, But the way the crews responded, because we were met with adversity. Hey, we're not going to eat. Hey, we're not going to sleep. We're just going to go slow and we're going to get it done. And we're going to get through this together. It's going to suck. And had a fire, man, the attitude that you get after going through like that, you know, if you're going to fires like Cleveland does all the time, you get that camaraderie of adversity and you overcome it together. So that bond is better between y'all. And so down here, you know, I think the next day after I got off, I almost drove myself to a nursing home, and checked myself in. But the next day, I think they ran 152 calls between our two stations. And I was like, wow. I mean, it was a week long. And so what I was going to say is, you know, when you face that, fires make everything better. Except for the people that are having fires, of course. They don't think that. It's just all the problems of the fire station go away. All the drama goes away when you get faced with adversity. And the guys, we came through it great. I can promise you that nobody from Texas is going to be coming up north to try to take y'all's jobs. Thank God things are back to normal. We were a nice 76 degrees today. So, but what I was going to say is, you know, we talked about your engine culture and how do they know what to do and what you're going to do and how do you imprint that upon them? And it's like you said, realistic training. One of the things that we do is my goal is to always make a positive impact on the fire in less than 2 minutes. How do I do this? So, you know, you start small and make sure that everybody on my engine has the ability to do this. So can we get our hose load deployed to the front door in less than a minute flowing water? Yes. 9 times out of 10, we can. Can we mask up together in less than 30 seconds? Yes. So I'm at a minute 30 on air flowing water at the front door. That's our goal. Do we hit it every time? No. And we train on it. And the training, it doesn't have to be long training. You know, it's not 4 hours at a time. We go out when I do drills with my company, we do them for about 30 minutes. And if we hit the marks, we're done for the, you know, hey guys, we're doing good. But we do it repetitively and every day. That way we're hitting those marks constantly. And, you know, firemen like doing fireman shit. It's better than the target solutions that John was talking about. So if you give them fireman stuff, if they're on an engine, hey, we're going to flow hose every day. It gives them pride to be in that engine and know that they're good at it. And it takes off for the younger people. It takes some of the stress out of it because they've done it 15 times before they do the fire. I don't know if that's pertinent to kind of what Jerry said or what you do, but you know, I'm so new to where I'm at and my shift. I'm not worried about culture in the fire station right now. I'm worried about the culture of my engine crew and make sure my guys are in the right frame of mind to be on this engine.
I think if you're showing up every morning, looking to make that mindset across the board on your shift, that is the culture work.
Yeah,
I mean that is what we're looking for because, like we mentioned in our first installment, was it's action driven. Culture is action driven. You have to be doing something, talking about it, hanging up posters, or you know, putting out a PowerPoint. You know, that's the bare minimum. You have to do things to start a culture. And if on the volunteer side, if that means showing up every Monday and requiring people to do that, that's a start. If you're on the career side of the house and you're expecting people to show up and do the roll call and be ready to go out the door at 0700 and not 0702, that's the culture. You know, whatever you accept is what you're going to get. So it's important to, I think, drive that home. You know, whatever your situation is, whatever your specific case is with your community, it's action driven. It can all be done, you know, hour by hour in your firehouse. It depends on how much effort you want to put into it and how many people you can get to buy in. So, I mean, the buy-in is a big deal. I think getting people to understand that it's a team effort. Shoop says all the time, it's a numbers game. You need people motivated to do this job together. So motivation comes from a lot of different levels. It comes from the academy level, the company level, and then, you know, further on. Micah, have you seen some examples at the academy level that where you see that, wow, this really works well here? Getting motivated or staying motivated as a group, this group exercise actually works. Have you seen something that we could probably take away and use further out where we're at?
So the culture, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you.
Perfect. So the culture experience I have been exposed to with Kansas City, Kansas Fire Department, I was motivated to come to this fire department because of their culture and their rich history and traditions and aggressive tactics. So KCK, whose department was established in 1882, is not that much older than my old department, which was established in 1892. Now, there's a big difference in terms of culture with these two departments. And I think a lot of it is, like you were mentioning, it's local, it's geographical, and a smaller fire department, they have their culture. They're a little more organized in some of their lessons in the classroom. Whereas I'm finding out with KCK, if things may be a little more disorganized, however, they're really rich in cultures where I'm learning the addresses of all 18 firehouses. I'm learning cross streets. They really hit you hard with learning knowing your gear. So I'm learning those aspects in the academy. And I think I'm still adapting to their culture, but
it sounds like it's built on the foundation, a strong foundation.
Yeah, it's so attractive to look at a fire department and know, hey, those guys, they got it going on. Now I understand there may be some screwballs here and there, and every fire department has them. However, if I surround myself with guys who have that rich environment and passion for the job, I want to be around those guys. As a new guy and as an experienced guy, I'm looking to learn from them.
So. Right. And Jerry, as an instructor, for you, when it comes to somebody like Micah, who has some experience somewhere else and coming into your organization, it almost puts a little more emphasis on your job, right? Like you don't want to be that instructor that looks at the guy that has a dozen years on already. And you don't want to be the instructor that doesn't have the answer for him, because you know, when he comes to you, he's coming to you with something solid. So, how does somebody with a little more time in the business come into an instructor as an instructor? How do you make sure you do this right? I mean, how do you make sure that he understands that he is the new guy in our organization, but yet still respect the fact that he's a man in his own right and he's here for the right reasons? Is there something there that we could do or say to make sure that, as a culture of the fire service, we respect time on the job, even though he's got less than a day on our job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeff. And I think that's exactly the point, is that we utilize his experiences. He's had experiences that we haven't had. We've had experiences that he hasn't had. So, you know, when you're teaching a class, you want to instill that culture of his experience was valuable. You know, again, he's probably seen something that you haven't. And, you know, what I tell my guys is we don't want to make every mistake. We can learn from other people's mistakes. We had an interesting experience. One of our departments, it was kind of interesting. I don't know why it happened this way, but the senior guys, couple ex-chiefs, you know, were volunteers, and they kind of had enough and they went away. And the other senior guys that stuck around didn't say anything. And this department just imploded on itself. I mean, socially they were a wreck. On the fire ground, they were worse of a wreck. So going back to what Jeff Shoup was saying, that this senior man concept, I think, is so important. And if I think one of the things I want to guys that are listening and watching this to take away is the senior guys got to speak up in not in a negative way, but in a positive way. And they need to be firm. And then the let's say the non-senior guys, the junior guys, need to go to the Jeff Shoups of the world or go to the, you know, Micah Heidemann and say, hey, Micah, I've only been on the job for a week. You've been on for 12 years. You know, tell me something. Or, you know, so there's that little bit of, you know, mentorship for everybody. In my job at West Point, every 2 years I got a new boss. So I was subordinate to him, but I ended up mentoring him because he just didn't know certain things about how we did things. So it's not strictly, you know, it's focused on the mission. It's focused on the purpose. And I don't care if you had a day on a job or 100 years on a job, you can help each other, you know? And again, I think especially the senior guys have that responsibility, and then junior guys have the responsibility of looking to the senior guys and go, hey, you know, what's the best way to do this? Or I did it this way. What do you, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that's culture to me. It's very personal. And again, it's related to training, but it's culture. It's not training.
Yeah. You know? I think what we're coming back to is like, you know, just, it's almost a study in human behavior, you know?
Yeah, it is.
You know, and I can imagine, John, when you get cycled back into the real world, when you're back out on the street, you probably would be appreciative if you walked into a house and you saw somebody with, you know, just as much of the lack of color in their hair when they're driving the engine as you're sitting next to them, you know, right? Because I mean, there's comfort in that, knowing that you have something to, you have someone next to you to bounce off of, right? I mean, does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Right.
I just worked at my old engine the other day on my old shift, and my driver had maybe 4 years on. I don't know. 2 years ago everyone had 20 plus years on. Now the person has 4 years on. Going back to the culture, I'm gonna go back just a little bit. You mentioned about, you know, the guy showing up at, you know, 7 o'clock or 6:59 or whatever. I had that experience that day, and we had a guy come in, had a rough night. You know, he put his gear by the rig and he went in the TV room at 7 o'clock. The guy with 25 years on, I was getting dressed, and I hear some yelling, and I have to poke my head out to see what's going on, and I know what's going on, and it calmed down. It was pretty civil, but the guy with the 25 years, I called him out and said, I don't care what your night was like last night. We're here today. We got to work. You don't go in there. We all have a job to do. And that is the senior man's job. Okay. And whether that fireman appreciated it or not, I'm going to guess he didn't. I appreciate what the senior man did. You know, I was going down there to referee what was going on, and they took care of it. And that's the stuff that needs to go on. Shoup used to talk about, you know, the boss saying, this is my senior man. If there's a problem, talk to him. If it gets to me, you have a problem. So it's very important between the officer and the senior man to really run the shift.
I think if the senior guys do not take ownership, it's a real problem. They really do. Go ahead, Jeff.
I tell you what, there's a cancer in a fire department where younger people coming on the department have maybe relatives, brothers, good friends, who go to that person coming on and say, oh, yeah, yeah, this is the way we do it. Just make it to work by starting time. You'll be okay, just like what John experienced with that guy, okay? Yeah, you know what? We got a chain of command. He's your boss and so forth. But, you know, oh, this guy, oh, you know, hey, don't listen to him. You know, that's a cancer. That's a cancer within a department. And that will kill any culture. Because now what you have is, a lack of respect being taught to the younger people coming on the department. Chances are the people who are telling younger people, yeah, we have this and this is what you need to know and things like that, but you know what, you know, you can skate here, you can talk with this. That is going to destroy any culture, okay? And as John pointed out, that guy who's coming in at 6:59 when starting time is 7 o'clock. You know, I know there's departments out there where whatever their starting times are, some of these departments, their guys are in there at least a half hour early, you know, just because they want to be there and get themselves ready and so forth. So when it's time for roll call, there's no question, you know, nobody's rushing, you know, to get their gear out or whatever the case may be. So,
and real quick, going back to my story, that was a truck guy calling the engine guy out. So it wasn't the senior man on that, on the engine company, right? I know, you know, it wasn't on that company, but it was in the house. So you can have more than one senior man. Each apparatus could have a senior man. Not all of them do. But that person took the responsibility to say, hey, we don't, that's not how we roll here at this house. And the point was made.
So what that senior man did, is he buffered the problem from both going up the ladder and down the ladder. He did the junior man a favor because nothing got written down. Right. And he did the lieutenant a favor because the lieutenant didn't have to come in and write anything down. So I think what that does is it fosters a lot of respect between the company officer and the senior man. And then it also fosters a lot of respect between the junior man eventually will understand what was done for him. So he'll understand at some point that, hey, you know what, that senior man saved me from a write-up by doing that. And he also straightened my ass out.
He also set the tone for the other six people in the firehouse that day.
Mm-hmm.
The other guys, like I said, most of my department is young. It was a very young crew that day. So this guy put himself out there, which he's not afraid to do.
Oh, no.
But yeah, the other people now know where he stands as well. So when they come in, they know that, oh, he's working. This is the expectation for the day, and it's been set.
I think that's the way to look at it, is that we're looking to make sure that we don't jam anybody up, mm-hmm. but we want people compliant. You know, right. We want to maintain the mission. We want to maintain what we should be doing, but we don't want to do it at the expense of disenfranchising somebody who may not understand exactly what's expected. So, you know, expectations are a good thing. However, they can work against you if the expectations are not clear, or if they're different between boss to boss, shift to shift, or senior man to senior man. So it's a difficult road to navigate, but that's, we've always like Jeff was saying, there's 90 different cultures on that department. So people should know your reputation when they come in, that, hey, we expect, this is the expectation. And you get a gentle nudge the first time, but the second time may not be so gentle. And I think that's a legitimate thing to have in your back pocket. There has to be some type of guardrail around the rules. There has to be some kind of stick and carrot when it comes to this kind of thing. Does that make sense, Shoop?
Yeah. Oh, sure it does. Yeah. We talked about that before. Hey, Jer, how would you guard that against that? Like with what you deal with or where you're from?
Guard against what?
Like what John's talking about, you know, we're going to come in with an attitude, you know, he's just going to get through, you know?
Yeah. I think it's continuous course corrections. You know, it's two things in my mind. It's what's our mission? What's our goal? What is it? What do we want this company to be? Do we want to be a company that just goes there and, you know, kind of gets it done, or do we want to be the best? Mm-hmm. And then once you've kind of set that goal and set the standard, those continual course corrections. Hey, Jeff, we don't sleep here at 7 a.m. We got to do rig checks or whatever it is, you know, and it may be gentle. It may not be so gentle, but somebody's got to drive the ship. And if the senior guys let that ship go astray, it's just human nature. You know, look, we all get complacent. We've been to a lot of fires. We've been to whatever. And you know, yeah, okay, we'll get it, you know, and that's just human nature, but we all need that. Hey, Jerry, let's do it a little better. Let's try something different, or we don't do it that way. But it's in my mind, it's continual personal course corrections. The senior guys need to initiate it, and the junior guys need to listen to it, and the junior guys need to ask for it. And if you have that synergy going on, you're doing really good. Like I said, I watched this department where the senior guys just stopped talking, and 6 months, the department was a mess. It was absolute social mess, fire ground mess, training mess. Just, I'm glad they weren't coming to my house if it was on fire. Let me put it that way.
Interesting. How do you address that? The kind of society we have today where, oh, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Guys can be fuck ups, and that's telling it the way it is.
Yeah.
And you got some guys that are good who want to be good. Well, are we afraid to tell those guys who are the fuck ups, hey, you either start upping your game or you need to be out of here? Something like that. You know, are we afraid to tell it the way it is? Is that something that we need to do to get some culture going, or get, is it like a shock value? You know, I don't know.
I think we need to do that. You know, if your only tool is a hammer, everything's a nail. So you know, as a senior guy, you can, like John said, you can berate that person that made a mistake, or you can get them on the side and go, hey, Schmedley, you know, you really dicked that up. Let me show you how to do it right. I'll help you out here. Then you've made that personal connection with that guy. You haven't embarrassed him in front of everybody. He knows you're making him better, and hopefully he'll get it. But you're right. If you got some schmucks that aren't going to get that, then it's time for the hammer. But
any senior person that I've known that's not had a good attitude has had a good reason to not have a good attitude, if I can say it that way. They've run into some adversity that they felt they could not get around. And then that just turned them sour. Their expectations weren't being met. So they've decided to kind of come in and put their feet up and say, well, I'm in the twilight years. I'm just going to get through it. If you can get to them and have them verbalize to you what wasn't done right in the last several years, and then you can work on it as an officer. I think you could turn yourself, you could turn a really good ally for yourself on the job. It's not going to happen overnight. I mean, they didn't earn a bad attitude overnight in most cases. But it's a reality. You know, you have that 20 to 25 year guy that he was either passed over on promotion or was just continually disregarded on a lot of different things. It's going to sour a person, you know, and they're going to take it out on the job. It's not a personal, it's a professional thing. But as an officer or as a fellow senior person, you can get back at him and get him back in the game. By addressing what had happened. I think that goes a long way. I know it's gone a long way for me. I know it's gone a long way for other people that I know on the job who have had reason to be disgruntled, but yet find their way back to the job. And I think that's an important part of that culture is, you know, you just don't disregard anybody, you know? Okay. Yeah.
I was going to ask Chad if he has anything to add to this, where you're going with this, Jeff.
No, nothing really that hadn't already been said. You know, I just think repetition is the key. And just, you know, I mean, I sat there and I'm listening to y'all talk about senior men, and I know I'm supposed to be getting a new driver here pretty soon. And hopefully that'll be, I think my senior man's going to have 15 years at this point. So, you know, I'm upping my experience level on my crew by like doubling it right away. So, you know, and it's just going to get to meet him and get him on the same team. And, you know, I think I have the youngest department here tonight, don't I? I think I'm at 50 years old without Chief Warren being here, because I think Oswego is, what, only 30?
Yeah, they're not that old either.
So, I mean, it's just kind of had a mature moment, lost my train of thought, but it's just
I thought I was the young guy.
No, it's just trying to, you know, I'm still so new at this. I'm still just, you know, just being consistent for them and keeping the training focused on our engine driven needs. And, you know, the change is going to happen. And I think we looked at it the other day, in the next 5 years, the top half of our department is probably going to retire because there's no middle ground. You know,
how far away?
Probably in the next 5 to 10 years, because we've got several guys with over 20, maybe 5 or 10 at 15, and all the rest are less than 10.
You know, that's an interesting thing, because, well, again, we're talking about culture and accountability. Well, I think we're going to be talking about accountability here, but that whole culture thing. You see, there you go. That's something that we saw back home, where for the longest time, the fire department had no hiring taking place, none. And then when they started to hire, the department was inundated with new people. So if you don't have people in senior positions holding on to those values, or being promoted to officers and holding on to those values, then the new people en masse like that, they're going to come in and inundate your system, and you're going to lose some of your ways of doing business. It's a proven fact. We've seen it. And as some of those younger people come in and they are making their own rules up on how they want to operate, and they get promoted, well, then you've lost even more of your culture or your ways of doing business. And that we've seen that. And so that's where it's interesting that, hell, I thought it was just an old department thing, you know, but apparently you guys are going to be seeing it soon. So I guess now's the time to start looking at that transition when those people get ready to go out the door, and who you're going to bring in. Well, who are you going to replace those, especially those older people and bosses within the ranks right now?
And do those people that are going to be becoming the older people or becoming the bosses, do they have, one, the passion and the knowledge to want to be the best? You know, everybody's passionate about their own things. You know, we're here, we're passionate about engine work. I mean, we love doing it. You know, I think, but on downs, what I've also seen is I've also seen people that I thought wouldn't be good. Once they get put in that position, they realize this isn't the same game. You give somebody that hadn't had responsibility before responsibility, and they're going to jump to it, and they're going to realize, oh, this is real deal. I need to up my game a lot. Mm-hmm. And then as they're doing that, they're learning, and hopefully they're bringing their guys with them.
I think that's part of it, you know, just giving guys their giving them their due.
Yeah.
When people have something they want, they usually make a good choice with it. What do you say there, Mike? Can you explain on more of that?
So everything is going through my head, and I want to highlight, just going back to what John was saying and using that story from his firehouse, this academy that I'm in right now, yeah, I have 14, 15 years on a job. And this academy, my instructors are the ones that are implementing their traditions on me. So a tradition with the KCK Fire Department is, hey, you show up at 7:30. Shift starts at 8, send the contract at 8, but you're going to be judged on your reputation and your actions if you're that guy that shows up at 7:55. Now, they do throw a bone every once in a while. You call the firehouse up and say, hey, my car wouldn't start. Can you hold over for me? Well, if you're the guy that shows up every day at 7:30, you got guys going to back you up. If you're that guy that shows up at 7:55, get your gear out at 7:59, you're that mofo that you don't got no respect for. And that's what I've learned. Totally different than my old department. So I'm learning in the academy, and I want to highlight my instructors in the academy are passing on their traditions. They've been empowered to teach their culture and traditions of their fire service by their uppers. Do those guys want to be on a 40-hour job teaching new guys their department? That's not their number one priority. They have passion for their job. So they are, as all leaders do, they kind of get put in situations they really don't want to do because they want to do the job that we love. That's being on the streets. So the guys are in the academy. They're teaching, implementing these cultures on us young bucks, and they get back on the streets so they can start rolling the game. And Mateer, you're that guy right now for your department. You got put in the fire academy. Do you want to be there? Absolutely not. But you're taking on the reins to impact many generations. And you have the opportunity to continue or to change some of the culture in your fire department. And that's a heavy, heavy crown to put on the head. So I know my instructors, they rather be on the streets fighting fires. They're telling us every day, like, I miss another fire. My guys are texting me right now saying, hey, we had fun at the fire. Where were you at, boss? Oh, you're on the 40-hour job. So I just want to say those instructors are having a huge impact on me. And as I think on all academies, so they take it with a big pat on the back. And I think you have a real opportunity to have a big impact. I think that mirrors volunteers. If they can somewhat find a playbook for the volunteer worlds, they can also start implementing some of their cultures that they want to have at their firehouse.
Good stuff, Mike. I appreciate it. I'd like to try and wrap this up. We're close to maybe a little bit over the hour mark here. So any final thoughts, either Jeff or Jerry, if you'd like to close this up here on culture in the engine house, I'd appreciate anything else that we may have left out at this point. I know I can't hem you up too tight here, Jeff, for just a couple of minutes, but you got anything left on your mind here?
No, I think we've covered quite a bit over our first presentation in this one. We've done a good job opening up and speaking openly for the most part about culture and so forth. And again, but I will say this before I stop talking. Culture is something you have to work at. And it's something that can be lost in a firehouse quick as can be. Am I right, John?
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly. It can change rapidly with one or two people. That's simple. So the greatest thing is having a strong officer at the top who believes in it. And he then has the next line of officers. Like, for example, if you have a captain in charge of the firehouse or the company, the next level is lieutenants, and the next level is the senior firefighters, and so on down the line. And if you have a strong captain who believes in that stuff, you got a good chance of keeping that culture as long as that officer or that captain is there. So someone who values the job, values things like the ways of doing business and protects the business. So, okay. So that's it all.
Great, great. Jerry, any cap on that?
Just real quick. A technique that works really well is called a stand-up. So if the senior man or the officer of that company or group does a stand-up in the morning, it's kind of like an informal roll call, and we would all stand up with a cup of coffee, and the boss would lay out his plan for the day. So the guy that wants to go sleep in a chair knows that's not the plan for today. We're going to do this morning. We're doing this after lunch, blah, blah, blah. So a stand up, real informal, keep it light, maybe tell a few jokes kind of thing, but you're kind of informally slash formally being the leader and laying the plan out so everybody knows what to expect and pitch in.
Okay. Right on. Well, that's it for this episode, guys, for Firefighting Friday. Appreciate Fire Engineering for having us host this here webinar. We are having a great time just kind of bouncing off between each other, some of the different experience levels here in our group. I hope everybody else has taken at least a little something from us. Please get back to us on any of this if you'd like to contact us through the Strategic Fire Training website or on our Facebook page. We'd be happy to chat with you. Chad, where do we go from here? We're going to be meeting up next month, correct?
Yes, I believe it's going to be the second Friday of the month from now on. So this one will probably come out next Friday. So, and then I don't know, but look for us on the second Friday of every month. Shoop, I will see you.
Yeah, how about that?
In about 4 days.
How about that?
Get you down here. Please do not bring your weather with you this time. Leave that crap up north.
Yeah, good luck with that.
What you got to do is come up here.
Yeah.
My wife and I were driving down the interstate today behind our house, and we were watching the skiers on the hillside. They were skiing down on ice.
Yes, sir. I'll be up there in the summer, maybe August.
Ice might still be here.
Hey, Chad, I don't know if you can see this or not, but this is really what snow looks like.
Yeah, I know. I saw that, Jerry.
I don't know what you're talking about down there, but that's snow.
Once again, to echo Dietrich, man, thank you, Fire Engineering, and everybody that if anybody wants to hear something, wants to hear us address a topic, reach out to us on Strategic Fire Training. We'll get it all taken care of. And Soup, do you have any idea what we're going to do next month?
I was just going to ask Jeff. I thought I had did I send that out to you guys? What's number three?
Oh, yeah. You had multiple ideas there, boss.
Okay, so safe to assume we're going to be getting into the actual engine stuff. We're going to get off the culture and get into actual firefighting shit.
Right. We'll get down to some tactics, right. I'm sure, yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Please be safe.
Okay, you don't want to